ॐ श्री गुरुभ्यो नमः हरिः ॐ गणानान्त्वा गणपतिगुं हवामहे कविं कवीनामुपमश्रवस्तमम् ज्येष्ठराजं ब्रह्मणां ब्रह्मणस्पत आनश्वं वन्नोतिभिः सीदसादनम् श्रीमहागणाधिपतये नमः सदाशिवसमारम्भां शङ्कराचार्यमध्यमाम् अस्मदाचार्यपर्यन्तां वन्दे गुरुपरम्पराम् आत्मस्वरूपबन्धुगणम् इन् दि एय्थ् चाप्टर् वि विल् डू द सेवेन्थ् वर्स् यु मे से तस्मात् सर्वेषु कालेषु मामनुस्मरयुध्यच मय्यर्पितमनो बुद्धिः मामेवैष्यस्य संशयः. तस्मात् देर्फोर् सो यु शुड् कनेक्ट् दिस् टु दि एर्लियर् वर्स्. Therefore means something is said in the earlier verse, therefore connects that way. So in the earlier verse it is said that the last thought in one's life will manufacture or will become the cause of the next birth. It will determine the nature of the next birth. Last thought. You see, thought is momentary. Therefore, it is not that last fraction of the second will determine the next birth. Not like that. The thought repeats itself, you know. So the last thought pattern determines the next birth. That is how it is said. It is true. It is not some mystic thing alone. It could be esoteric, because how can we know what birth is going to come? Therefore, so Sri Krishna said, the last thought pattern determines the next birth, nature of the next birth, therefore we have to believe it. You can take it like that, because it is about the next birth. You can only believe it, you cannot verify it. But still, there is some logic involved in it. You see, there is a small story told by a Mahatma. There was one yogi who has this power of going into samadhi often in his daily life. Therefore, this yogi, he wanted to have a cup of coffee. So he called his devotee and asked him to bring a cup of coffee, to prepare and bring a cup of coffee in the kitchen. So the devotee went, boiled water, this and that. So it takes 10 minutes. In India, it takes 10 to 15 minutes coffee, not like here. So therefore he was preparing and he brought it. But by the time this Mahatma, he felt like doing dhyanam and he went into samadhi. Samadhi means a mindless state. And then the devotee brought the coffee. But then he noticed the Mahatma in samadhi, which is not unusual for him. And therefore the devotee, he should not disturb the Mahatma, you know. So he took away, he went away and he consumed that coffee and he was happy and he went away. Then Mahatma was in samadhi for half an hour. And then he opened his eyes. And the first thing he said was, "Where is the coffee? Did you bring coffee?" That is the first thing he said. So this only shows that the intermediary state of mindlessness, not mindlessness, the thoughtless state. So that intermediary state is like a deep freezer. So whatever thought was there at the last moment, or thought pattern was there at the last moment, it just freezes there. And so you wake up to the waking state now, come out of that samadhi, and you are into the regular waking state. So the waking state begins with a thought pattern again. That is what waking state is. The mind starts thinking, and so you now have a waking state. Yeah. Therefore, the moment the mind starts blossoming, whatever was the frozen state of the mind earlier, the same thing will come out naturally. So that is how the Mahatma thought of the coffee the moment he came out of the samadhi. The same thing applies in our life also every day. So in the night we go to sleep with a pattern of thinking, and the next morning when we wake up, the same pattern comes up, because sleep is a kind of deep freezer. Then between the death here and the birth into another body, there is a gap. That gap is like a prolonged sleep. That is how they describe it. So whatever was the thought pattern before sleep, it will come back. In fact, I knew a friend. He had invested in securities. Some people do that. They don't do any job and all that. In California, you come across many such people. They just don't work for any employer. They just invest a certain money in the securities, and they will be playing with it. And so, in California, by the time here it begins, New York Stock Exchange, it will be, in California, it will be behind, you know. So it will be early morning there, right? So 6 o'clock. If it starts here at 9, it will be 6 o'clock there. And it stops here at 5. And it will be 2 o'clock there. So this gentleman wakes up early and starts working from 6 to 2 he works. He sits at home and works on the computer. And so he invests in new stocks, withdraws from old stocks. This is how he makes money. This is how he makes money. So it is so easy to make money, that is interesting. He must be knowing a lot. Anyway, so he tells me, what is your last thought before going to sleep? He said the security situation, because he checks it. He has invested all the money. By 2 o'clock he has done his investment part and withdrawal part. And before night at 10 o'clock, before going to sleep, he just he clicks the mouse, and the screen shows the scenario, how various securities are functioning. Are they going up or down? In fact, the software draws a graph also. So it will tell you where you stand, with plus minus all that. And he goes to sleep. The first thing he remembers next day morning is exactly the same. And he opens up, and now he remembers the stock market. And then he goes to the laptop computer, which is just sitting there, clicks it, and it shows what happened during the night. So this is how the mind functions. From the moment you go to sleep till the moment you wake up, the mind is in the deep freezer. The same thing applies to death followed by birth, because that functions as a long sleep. You see, what happens is, when a person dies, it is the body which dies. I mean, which starts the process of disintegration. What is death? Death is a word which has no counterpart in the reality, because nothing dies. Really, there is nothing which dies there. The body is alive. My body is there. Dies means what? It is just continues to be there. And then the constituents of the body, the five elements, they just continue to exist. It's not that they disappear and they get annihilated. Nothing gets annihilated. It is the law of conservation of mass and of energy. They continue. So the body, the prithivi, goes into prithivi. Apaha goes into apaha. So then the life continues. Life doesn't die. The matter does not die anyway. The consciousness does not die. Nothing dies. It is only a psychological conditioning, sometimes a social and also cultural conditioning, religious conditioning, that makes us believe death and then fear it. Anyway, so what happens is, when this body starts the process of disintegration, integration ends and disintegration sets in. So that process, that shift in the process, is called death. Then what happens? The subtle body, which can be called as the memory body, you can look at it like that, memory body. Because when you go into sleep, it is the memory body which is frozen, and next day morning it is the memory body which wakes up and blossoms. The same thing happens at the time of death also. Then Therefore, the memory body, it gets disassociated or dissociated from the physical body because it cannot hold the memory body in it anymore, because the process of disintegration has already set in. And so this memory body, it being very subtle, it travels in space and it goes to another place, and there it acquires another physical body. This is the mechanism. So, therefore, the memory body, it will manufacture the body that is just suitable to its content. Whatever is the content of memory, that manufactures the physical. Generally, it is the subtle which determines the character of the gross. Suppose a tree is about to come from this seed. What kind of tree it will come? Will it be a mango tree or will it be a neem tree? That fact, that gross it is, mango tree is different from neem tree. That is the very gross difference between the two. But that difference, that important, very big difference it is between the two trees, that difference is determined by the subtle which is there in the seed. Not even the gross aspect of the seed. It is not the shell of the seed which determines the nature of the tree. And if you just break the seed into some paste and get some powder out of it, it is not that powder which determines the mango or the neemness of the tree. It is the subtle aspect, the subtlest aspect of that seed, that determines the gross nature of the tree. The same thing applies to the physical body also. So the memory body, which is very subtle in nature, its character determines the type of body that this person, that this individual or jiva will get in the next birth. That how it happens. This is what Bhagavan was telling there. A very interesting principle. Because, people think that it is the matter first and intelligence later. First the child is born, matter, and then intelligence will slowly develop. Slowly intelligence won't develop, intellect will develop, not intelligence. That intellect also, it manifests, it is already there in the subtle form, and that manifests. So it is not the matter which is first and intelligence later. No, it is the intelligence first and matter later. So it is the memory body which is all intelligence. That assumes a material form. And so the character of this intelligence or the memory body determines the physical body. For example, in this memory body, you see, there was one person. He was on his deathbed. Then a Mahatma came to visit him and asked, there was a topic of the last desire. So, because he is on the deathbed, when the person is on the deathbed, they project all kinds of sentiments. So, this man said, my last desire is to enjoy chicken biryani. You know chicken biryani? This is a Hyderabad stuff it is, this chicken biryani. Very famous in Hyderabad. So that is his last desire. The Mahatma told, you will take, in the next birth, you will become a vulture. Because chicken is dead meat, and so the desire to eat dead meat or dead body, that is a very significant character of the vulture. Because the vulture, it is at a very high altitude. But its thinking is not high. It is always looking for the dead corpse of a rat or a whatever thing on the ground. So, it is always looking for the dead corpse only. So, you will become a vulture in the next birth. Don't have that kind of a desire. This is what the Mahatma told. Because it is the memory body which determines the nature of the next birth. Tasmat, therefore, create the memory body appropriately. Have the right kind of memory body at the time of death. That is very important. Okay, so then one may say, okay, just before death, I will consult you and acquire the right kind of thought pattern so that Till the death I need not bother about this sadhana, bhakti, devotion, jnanam, all those things I don't bother. I will be engaging in sense pleasures and worldly life. At the time of death, I will send a word to you. Then you come and tell a few things about the Atma, Brahma, or Bhakti and all that. So I will create the body, memory body, last minute memory body, and next birth will be that of a devata or whatever. No, it won't happen like that. It won't happen. How it happens, you know, you see, what kind of a psyche structure that you have created that persists in the last moment of the life also. It won't get altered like that. No transformation will happen in the last minute of the life. No, nothing will happen. It just persists. You see, one Sethji was there. He was a merchant, big merchant. His merchandise was these cotton bales. He's a wholesale cotton bale merchant. Cotton bales, you know, they are manufactured, they are produced in North Carolina and all that. And India imports all this cotton from North Carolina, some of the cotton. So he imports it, big bales of cotton, and then supplies to the mill people and all that. That is his merchandise. So he is on his deathbed. Very big company it is, and he is a big millionaire. He is on his deathbed. So all the devotees joined together. One or two Mahatmas also joined him because he is a rich man, you know. So he has a way of attracting some of these devotee people. All these people joined around him and they formed a nice congregation. And they were doing Hare Rama, Hare Rama bhajan. Generally they do that. When the person is just leaving the world, they do Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare and all that. They were doing it. Then this man is just last minutes of his life. He's just looking like that. Then one Mahatma asked him, just sitting by his bedside, "Are you thinking of Rama? We are chanting Rama and Krishna. Are you thinking of Rama?" He said, "No, I am not thinking of Rama." "Then what are you thinking of?" "So yesterday a new consignment of bales has arrived, and was it received properly, accounted properly, is it being supplied to the retailers? This is what I am thinking." That is what he told. So what happens is, the person is on his deathbed, and we gather around him. And we are doing some bhajan. While doing bhajan, we are thinking of his wealth, who will get that wealth after his death, etc. And he is thinking of the same thing. Nobody is thinking of Rama or Krishna. They are just saying only orally. These people have no urgency to think of Rama and Krishna because all these people, they are not dying now. They can think of Rama and Krishna later. Just the situation demanded that you say Hare Rama, Hare Rama, so they are just mumbling a few words. They are not in a big hurry to think of Rama and Krishna. And that gentleman, he cannot think of Rama and Krishna because this is the first time he is trying to do that and he cannot do that. Therefore, please take seat. Don't bother, they all have verses, they all have.
Came in and asked me to pass them
out. Okay, please. Yeah, go ahead. So the situation is like this. You cannot have that alternative. Namely, I will take care of this spirituality in the last part of my life, last 1 month, or last 1 week, or the last day, or the last 1 hour, or the last minute. I will focus on Ishvara and get a better birth next. It will never work like that. So what should we do? Tasmat, therefore. So you have to create that psyche, mind. Mind is what you create. You see, mind is sankalpa. You see, what is mind? There is nothing sitting there. the moment, the thought of the moment is the mind of the moment. And the thought, it has an origin in the subtler layers of the mind. Thought is the superficial outcome of the mind, whereas the mind has a subtler layer, which is sometimes it can be called as buddhi. So this subtler layer of the mind is also called vasana. And therefore, it is the vasana that determines the character of thought patterns. And so what kind of vasanas you create, that determines the character of the person's thinking, not only at the time of death, but during the living itself. Therefore, you have to carefully create a proper psyche. This is called buddhi nirmana. You have to create buddhi. That structure of values in the mind, you have to create it. Carefully create it. That is sadhana. You see, creating something in the outside is very easy. They say vikasa. Vikasa means progress or development. So, you can always create something in the outside. Suppose you have a place filled with all weeds and other things. Not very beautiful place, all weeds are growing there. Now you can create a beautiful park there. You can do that. That is easy. Then suppose at home, what they call interior design. So you hand it over to some of the specialists in interior design. They will see the space inside and then they will come out with some of the best recommendations. So how to make it look beautiful. Even otherwise it looks beautiful only. Some problem, so you can make it look beautiful and create an atmosphere around which looks very beautiful and all that. What color should be applied to the walls, and then wallpaper, what design it should have, the floor, what should be the floor, what kind of carpet it should have. So carpet, you know, whatever may be the nature of carpet, it will attract all dirt and the infections into it, all bacteria into it. That is what carpet is. Anyway, so the color of the carpet is not going to make a big difference. But still, we have some funny notions about all of it. So, what color of the carpet should be, what design, like that, you want to create something in the outside. These are all unimportant. Not only they are unimportant, they could really become a big distraction of the mind. Huge distraction. That is how we get lost in this samsara. That is how we get lost. We should not waste our mental energies. You see, it is not the physical energy that is important. It is the mental energy. How you are using it. Because ultimately that determines the structure of vasanas in the mind. And if the vasanas, that deep-rooted impressions in the mind are not desirable, then that will do a lot of harm to the person down the road, in this birth, in this life, and in the next birth also. It can deeply affect the character of the next birth itself. Therefore, buddhi nirmana, that you have to carefully create a proper mindset. It must be sattvika, so that one will get a birth of sattvic nature. It should not be rajasic and tamasic. Therefore, if taking birth is inevitable, then it should be the right kind of birth, not some rajasic or tamasic birth. So for that, the mind should be made sattvic now and here. So, tasmat, therefore. This is the meaning of tasmat. So now what should we do? Sarveshu kaleshu mam anusmara. So, Sri Krishna's advice, hey Arjuna, at all times, sarveshu kaleshu. Sarveshu kaleshu means what? At all times means, it can mean pratahkala, madhyanhakala and sayamkala. It can mean that way. So, you contemplate upon Ishvara. Anusmara is contemplation. I will explain it further. So, you contemplate upon Ishvara. Mam is Ishvara, you know. Mam anusmara. You contemplate upon Ishvara in the morning. Then in the afternoon, then in the evening, you do it. Tasmat sarveshu kaleshu. In fact, the first thought when we wake up must be of Ishvara. And the last thought of the waking state must be of Ishvara. This is what is called Pratyaharanyaya. Therefore, by following this method, what happens, you know, during that frozen state of the mind, mind is frozen in the sleep. So, in that frozen state, the mind is in the subtle form of Ishvara Bhakti. And so that's why the first thought will be again Ishvara Bhakti, the last thought will be again Ishvara Bhakti in the day. So this way, it works both ways. When you practice it as a sadhana, the mind gets created, the right kind of mind is created, the bhakti is created in the mind. Once it is created, now it works the other way. The first thought you get spontaneously is that of Ishvara when you wake up from sleep. It works both ways. You do it sadhana, and then it manifests from its side, and it becomes spontaneous. It won't be, you need not pursue it as a sadhana anymore. Therefore, before going to sleep and waking up, bring the Ishvara Bhava, the bhakti or devotion, contemplation of Ishvara into your life. Sarveshu kaleshu ma manusmara. Then what happens, you know, as the day progresses, all the dormant samsaric vasanas, worldly vasanas, they start blossoming. Normally, meditation, the best time, what is the best time they ask? The best time for meditation is early morning. As early as you can make it after you wake up. So within 1 hour from the time of waking up, if you can make it, then that is the best time. Like that. As early as you can make it possible. Because as the day progresses, now you wake up at 5, 6, 7, 8, the day is progressing. All the vasanas are now in full blossom. By the time it is 7:38, they are in full blossom. And then meditation won't work. Meditation is what? Meditation is the mind in no agitation. That is meditation. And when all the vasanas, they blossom, so the mind acquires a hyperactive state, which is almost similar to agitation, and that kind of a mind is the starting point, and then you do meditation. It just doesn't work. It ends up as a daydreaming, but no meditation. In fact, sometimes when we go here and there for outreach, in the name of outreach, when we travel and meet people in different places, they come out with some programs. So, which it is very difficult to handle that programs. They say 9 o'clock is the meeting. Okay. Swamiji, let us begin with meditation. At 9 o'clock, what meditation you will do? You will do daydreaming only. 9 o'clock, meditation won't work. So, even I won't get that enthusiasm to guide a meditation at 9 o'clock. Because the mind has started functioning at its full swing already. And now meditation is just the opposite of that situation. It is like the flight is about to take off and then you pass orders, stop. How can he stop? He cannot. He has acquired already the acceleration, on the process of accelerating and about to fly. Now you stop and stand on the ground if you say he cannot. Mind is like that. Therefore, you have to meditate as early as possible, 6:30. 7 maximum. To begin at 7 and ending at 7:30 in optimum time, but not after 7:30. So this is what I was saying. The vasanas, they blossom. And now you have come up to 12:01. At that point, you better give a break to these vasanas, to this worldliness. Just give a break. Otherwise, the worldliness becomes stronger and stronger in us. Because what happens is, in our life of sadhana, we always work in opposites, in contradictions. We contradict ourselves. So, we go to some Vedanta class or Vedanta retreat for a week or so. And so what is retreat? Retreat means withdrawal from the world. That is nivrutti. That is called retreat. So, now you withdraw from the world for a week. Let us hope so. Even after coming here, we don't withdraw from the world. We come with newspapers, telephones and cell phones and family and brother-in-law and a whole lot of samsara is brought into the scene, and you are interacting with all of them and occasional Vedantic class. Now the Mahatma has to accomplish some miracles. Kaisa hota? Nothing works like that. So what is, we don't retreat at all. Okay, let us assume there is a retreat of 1 week. You have really retreated from the world. Now, after 1 week is over, so what all gains that we have made, gains means what? The hyperactivity of the mind which is caused by the worldliness is reduced. Now you have that inner space, more of inner space, and the quietude of the mind you have, and thereby you can focus on your own swarupa, you can be comfortable with yourself, you are okay with solitude, you enjoy the solitude. These are the benefits of retreat. Let us assume you got some or more of them at the end of the week. Now, what we will do? Should we preserve these benefits or not? So what we do? We go back into the world with a vengeance and lose all these benefits, lose and neutralize all this progress in no time whatsoever. So this way, we always work in contradictions. We contradict ourselves. Nobody else won't contradict us. We contradict ourselves. And we undo the progress today, that is the progress made yesterday, we undo it today. This is how we will be going back and forth. That's why this back and forth thing leads to frustration. Because they ask when the progress will come. Generally they ask, what are the signs of progress? When it will come? How much time it will take? It won't come. If it is about to come, then you can fix a time for it. It won't come. Because whatever little progress is made on first is gone by second. It should not be like that. Therefore, the bhakti bhava that you have, one has to live, the mind has to be put on a level of devotion and understanding. And so one has to abide in that bhavanatmaka sthiti, a state of mind in which the world is there, you are indeed interacting with the world, and the world continues to be there, and you go about doing the things that you have to do, all that is there, but it is there with some space. There is always some space with reference to that, and that space is gained by positing oneself at a higher level of sthiti, mental state of devotion, that bhavanatmaka sthiti. One has to live in that. One should not live in a total body consciousness all through the day. When needed, we invoke the body consciousness, and the rest of the time, we live above the threshold of body consciousness. In that state of mind created by intense devotion to Ishvara. So we should not lose it. Therefore, in the afternoon also, bring that devotion one more time into the day. So that space, that inner space, so which is created with a lot of sadhana, so we don't lose it. So morning, you have got that space. Evening, you will bring it back. Afternoon also, you should have it. A little prayer in the heart. I'm not suggesting that in the office you have an altar and all that. It may not be possible. You can keep something if you wish, but in the mind, Ishvara is ultimately in the heart only. Therefore, we do a little meditation or relate to Ishvara with devotion during the daytime also. Sarveshu kaleshu. Morning, pratahkala, madhyanhakala, sayankala. These are the three kalas. In all the three kalas, we have the devotion to Ishvara. It is there. It is coming up again and again. Tasmat sarveshu kaleshu mam anusmara. Sarveshu kaleshu could also mean day night, then every day of the week, every week of the month, every month of the year, all years of the life. That way also you should look at it. Tasmat sarveshu kaleshu. The idea is like this. Here is the world before me. Here is Ishvara within me. Let us take it like that. For the present, we are talking of devotion, you know. So here is Ishvara in the heart. Here is the world before me. Now, I have to do a few things in the world. There are a few things that I should do in the world, and I should not hold back, because life is a life of action. So we go about doing the things that we are supposed to do. We go about doing it, but we do not belong to the world, and world doesn't belong to us. That is how it is. We belong to Ishvara, and Ishvara belongs to us. So this is the meaning of saying Mamaivamsho Jivaloke Jivabhuta Sanatanaha, 15th chapter. So I belong to Ishvara. I am a part of Ishvara. I'm talking of the part situation in the context of devotion. Don't bother about Advaitam and all that. I'm not saying anything against Advaita. Subject to the realization of Advaita, I'm talking. Maam Anusmara, he's saying, you know, he's saying you contemplate upon me. So, you are the devotee. Don't be the worldly person. Occasionally remembering Ishvara. That kind of convenient devotion is not proper. Convenient devotion means what? You fully belong to the world, in the world. You are a worldly person. But then this world is not a convenient place. It has a lot of toxicity associated with it. It makes us suffer and all that. And therefore, we want some kind of a stopgap arrangement with the Ishvara, so that we occasionally have an appointment with Ishvara, so that he will take care of all our worldly affairs and needs. What is that? We are not talking of that. You may do that, but that is not what we are talking here. We are talking of Sarveshu Kaleshu. So, you go into the world to the extent it is needed. Yoga Karmasu Kaushalam. The skill of choosing actions. Don't go on doing every action from morning to the nightfall. That is called pravritti. That kind of pravritti shila. Getting wedded to activity and actions, it is not good. That is not yoga. Yoga is you choose. Choice. If there are 10 actions that are appearing before me, I will do. I ask the question, is it the karma that I have to do? Am I supposed to do this? Am I supposed to do this? Am I supposed to do this? Then when the answer comes as no, I reject all of them and do just the right action, called duty. Therefore, we go about doing the things that we have to do, because life is a life of action. Living is nothing more than action. But we do not identify ourselves with the world. We are not part of the world. World is not part of us. We are part of Ishvara, and Ishvara is ours. That kind of a relation with Ishvara has to be established. Ramakrishna Paramahamsa used to tell a story. This Dhatri, they call. Dhatri means the Aya. You know Aya? The nurse who visits the home. And so here is a rich man. He has two or three kids. And so he employs a nurse. And this nurse comes early in the morning. By the time the kids wake up, that is 6:37, the nurse is there already, well-dressed and all that. Then from that moment onwards, this nurse, she rears the kids. She bathes them, and then she dresses them, takes them to the school, gives them food, arranges their books, all that. And then brings them back from the school. In the meanwhile, madam has come back from the club, from the women's club, and hands over these kids to the mother. This is what the nurse does. Right? You got the situation? This nurse has her own children. Her own husband and her own home. You know that? Therefore, she works here. She takes care of these kids. And she puts all her energy to take care of this household. But where does her love lie? You answer me. In another household. Her love is not here. She is devoted to her work. It's not that she doesn't do it that work properly. If she doesn't do that work properly, she is not doing the right thing. She is committing a mistake. She takes care of the kids as if they are her own kids. She will do all her duties very meticulously, dutifully. But her love, she doesn't belong to this household. She belongs to a different household, her husband. Pati Devata they call. Her God elsewhere. Her love is elsewhere. You be like that nurse. You are in this world like that. Whatever you have to do that, what duties are there in this world, do them dutifully. But you do not belong to this world. You belong to another home. Your home is elsewhere. That home is Ishvara, and that Ishvara is in your heart. Mam Anusmara. Sarveshu Kaleshu. Nurse is taking care of this child, but she remembers her son. She takes care of her child. She remembers him. Similarly, we function in this world, full well knowing that we do not belong to this world. World is mithya. You do not belong to the mithya category. You will become mithya yourself if you become worldly person. So it is called atmocheda, compared with suicide. Because you are identifying with mithya, you should not do that. Function in the mithya as it is demanded, as the situation demands, but don't belong to the mithya, because sanatanaha, you are the sanatana, you are the infinite, you are the timeless reality. So your true home is Ishvara, and that Ishvara is here in the heart. Therefore, sarveshu kaleshu mamanusmara yudhyacha. Yudhya means battle. You participate in the battle. Immediately, our psychoanalyst friends feel that Sri Krishna is encouraging people to do injury and violence. So that is wrong. Yudhyacha means it is allegorical. You see, Gita is historic, Mahabharata is historic. But then it is not only historic, it is symbolic and allegorical. Dharma Kshetre, Kuru Kshetre. So, 5600 years back, in a place called Kurukshetra, in Haryana, which is the present Haryana state in India, there was a prince of the warrior class. So, that is the history part of it. Okay, you leave it like that. You need not say all that history did happen or did not happen. It did happen. It is an epic and it is historic. I am not against it. But Dharma Kshetre, Kuru Kshetre has another meaning, more important and more immediate meaning. That meaning is, this is the Kuru Kshetra. This is Kshetra. Sri Krishna says, this is Kshetra. Idam Shariram, Kaunteya Kshetra Mitya Vidhiyate. This is the Kshetra. And this is the Karma Kshetra, because it is a life of action. And then that karma must be the righteous kind of karma. Dharma Kshetra it is. And here are, in this body mind are the asuras and devatas. So, all the thought patterns related to sadhana and bhakti are devatas. And all the thought patterns that are related to sense indulgence, the worldliness, they are the asuras. And there is always a battle between the two. Always. As long as humankind exists on this globe, this battle between devatas and asuras will be there. The right kind of value system versus the wrong kind of value system. This battle goes on. One may dress in a particular spiritual way and sit in the temple, but still this battle goes on in his heart. One may be sitting in a club playing cards, still the battle must be raging in his heart too. Unless he becomes insensitive to what is going on in his mind, he learns to suppress it. If he doesn't do that mistake, then the battle is on. Therefore, that is the battle we are talking about, yudhyacha. You don't run away from the battle. You face the situations with courage and do your duty. But this is what is said, hands to the work, heart to Ishvara. Mamanusmara yudhyacha. Like that nurse. Do your duty, but never lose sight of Ishvara in your heart. Mamanusmara yudhyacha. That is the meaning of yudhyacha. Don't be disturbed by the word yudhyacha. Don't feel apologetic about it. There is nothing wrong in it. You do your duty in the battlefield of life. That is the meaning of it. Shankara yudhyacha. Yuddhancha swadharmam kuru. What is this yuddha? What is this battle? Swadharma is the battle. your duty. That is the better. If you are a doctor, you have to tend to a patient, do it. Don't say, I am doing puja, come later. Do it now. I'm meditating, you come later. Don't do that. Do it now. But don't lose sight of Ishvara in the heart. Don't create divisions. Like this is a spiritual, that is secular. That is wrong. There are no such divisions. When we do our duty, that is spiritual. When we contemplate upon Ishvara, that is also spiritual. Therefore, Ma Manusmara Yudhyacha Sarveshu Kaleshu. Then what is Anusmara? You see, Mahatmas love Gita so much that they contemplate upon every word of it. They won't leave it anything. What is Anusmara? Smara is contemplation. What is Anusmara? Anu is Paschat. Anu means afterwards. Contemplate afterwards. What do you mean by contemplate afterwards? So, who has contemplated first so that you are contemplating afterwards? Who is the one that contemplated first? So, it is like saying, okay, after you take lunch. After lunch I should take, means who takes first? So, there must be somebody to take it first. Then only after taking lunch becomes meaningful. That is how it is. After. You see, between Ishvara and Jiva, there is a very, very powerful relationship which cannot be undone. It is there always. You may lose sight of it, you may ignore it, but it is always there. You are always connected to Ishvara in an inseparable way. Jiveshvara yoho anubandhaha. So Jiva and Ishvara, like wave and ocean. The wave may ignore the ocean. I don't care for the ocean like that. There is a Nastika wave. It says there is no ocean. But still, even while saying, and it conducts a conference of other Nastika waves in which papers are presented proving that ocean doesn't exist. So, but still, even while participating in this big conference, all these waves are indeed existing in Ishvara only. They can never exist away from the ocean. So we are like that. So, mamaivamsho jivaloke jiva bhuta sanatanaha. So, you are an inseparable part of the Ishvara. So, therefore, first Ishvara, so that's why sakhayau. Ishvara and Jiva are close bosom friends, they are. So, comrades. Now, comrades from eternity, for all times to come. They are the comrades. Till this Jiva knows his oneness with Ishvara, this camaraderie will continue. Even when Jiva is ignorant of his duties as a friend, he has to remember Ishvara, that is his duty. He is connected to Ishvara, he should not forget it, but he forgets all the time. Yet, the connection is maintained, it is never severed. Therefore, it is Ishvara who thinks of Jiva first. So how he thinks? So Ishvara is the karma phala data, who he bestows the results of actions on this individual. So he looks into his karmashaya, the reservoir of karmas. He is thinking of this fellow only. And so then he finds out which are the karmas that have fructified. So he is thinking of this fellow. And then he gives a birth according to the fructified karmas. So he is thinking of this person. He gives eyesight, faculty of hearing, taste buds. He gives the life, faculties of action. He gives them and gives a body which is alive and kicking, capable of accomplishing a number of functions. Having given them, he doesn't forget about this Jiva. He maintains them as the Hrishikesha. Hrishika is the sense organ and other organs of action. All Indriyas are called Hrishikesha, Hrishika. So Hrishikesha means Indriyadhipati, the overlord of Indriyas. Therefore, Ishvara has bestowed this body-mind with eyesight, and then he maintains the eyesight. As long as the body-mind is functioning, all these organs are functioning according to their capacity. So Ishvara is the one who, it is like you have put all kinds of gadgets in the hall, home. This is also home only, you know. It's a city. So this home is a big home. So electric lights, fans, and all kinds of gadgets you have put. The most modern gadgets you have fixed. So suppose the most modern bulb you fix, very beautiful holder, most wonderfully designed holder, and a dome of made of gold, gold dome, made of gold, costing $1,000, that is the bulb sitting there. Will it glow? It won't glow. Unless electric, just because it is $1,000 golden dome, it won't glow like that. Only the God electricity has to make it glow. Even if the dome is not so costly, it will glow. So similarly, just because I put cosmetics this and that and put a very costly Banana Republic suit, coat, boot, all these things I put, so that doesn't make the body functional. That is not how the body is becoming functional. Ishvara is thinking of me, this poor guy, he is sitting there, he has to give a class, so we have to give him some lung power, and we have to give him some thinking power and capacity to read Sanskrit verses. All this I have to give him, otherwise he will sit saying me, etc. So Ishvara is thinking of me, providing all these faculties, and then here I am in all glory. He is already thinking of me, he is already taking care of me in every minute of my life. He is doing the smaranam of me only. And now it is my duty to reciprocate. Anusmara. Ishvara is doing smaranam. At least you think of Ishvara afterwards. As a consequence of his smaranam, you should think of Ishvara. Suppose my friend is there. He thinks of me and gives an email. I just keep quiet. Don't respond to it. What does it mean? He thought of me and gave an email. I don't respond to it and I forgot about it. That means I am not doing anusmaranam. Smaranam he did. Anusmaranam I did not do. I have to do. Anusmara. So this is how bhaktas look at that vakya. Bhakti people are there. They also study Gita. Not only Vedantins. Bhakti people also study Gita. For them Gita is very important. So they look at it like that. They say, Bhagavan is thinking of you. You start thinking of Bhagavan. It is in all fairness you should do that. Mam anusmara. No, I have to do my duties in the world. Do them while doing the duties, while fulfilling this swadharma, contemplate upon Ishvara. So, be a duty-bound devotee. That is the idea. Don't be a duty-bound worldly person. You will lose sight of the duties also eventually. You will become more worldly and lose sight of duties also. Be a duty-bound worldly devotee. So, swakarmana tam abhyarchya. Siddhim vindati manavaha. Swakarmana, do your duty. Tam abhyarchya, be a devotee of Ishvara. Both should go together. Otherwise, this world is a very dangerous place. It is like a vortex that sucks whatever comes into it. That is the type of world it is. We can safeguard ourselves while living in this. You cannot live anywhere other than the world. So while living in the world, there is only one way of safeguarding ourselves, protecting the purity of the mind, the calmness and quietude of the mind you have to protect. Otherwise, we will become sick mentally and physically. There is only one way of protecting it. That is, anusmara, mam anusmara. Always contemplate upon Ishvara at all times. That is the advice. Then how to do it? How to create a psyche, a mental structure that is conducive for this contemplation of Ishvara, even while functioning in the world? How to create it? You have to assiduously cultivate it. It won't come. You have to cultivate it. For example, we are very worldly people. This worldliness, how it came to us? Bhagavan gave it? No. Bhagavan did not give. Bhagavan gave sense organs and organs of action. That is what he gave. We cultivated the worldliness. How did we cultivate? Arpita manobuddhi. The emotional power, emoting power, manaha. And the power of intellection, buddhihi. We have these two powers, we have just handed over to the world. All emotions about the world only, all intellection about the world only. This is how we created, we created the worldliness in us. This is our problem. We should not do that. The world doesn't need all your emotions. In fact, it doesn't need any of your emotions. It doesn't need all your intellection. It just requires that much intellection which is enough for performing the duty, nitya karma. That's it. That much intellection is enough. Then what should we do with this emotional energy? I tell you, people ask about atma jnanam and all that. I would look at it like this. You see, we work all our life in contradiction, contradicting ourselves all the time. When I say I love, and then I say I hate, I have split myself into the opposites, opposite emotions. This splitting of oneself into opposite emotions all the time, day after day, hour after hour, is madness. Nothing short of madness. It is like you put two pumps. One pump is pumping water in this direction. Another pump is pumping the same water in this direction. Where will the water flow? It won't flow anywhere. It will remain where it is. Then what will happen? A lot of heat is generated. That is what will happen. Really, you can devise an experiment of that kind. That is how it works. Because the two forces of pulling, they are neutralizing themselves all the time. The net energy is zero. This is how it happens in our lives, the power of emoting. So I love, it is the power of emoting, it's a power. I hate, the power in the opposite direction. The same I, the same individual. So the person splits himself in this way, and at the end of the day, he is so tired in these contradictory emotions, he is mentally fatigued. Mental fatigue is the outcome of the contradictory emotions. And people talk of energy, spiritual energy. I tell you, the energy that we waste, the mental energy that we waste in contradictory emotions is all the energy you need. You don't need one iota of extra energy. Only that much energy is enough to realize the self. You don't need any extra energy. That's it. Don't lose any mental energy in the opposites. There are no good things and bad things in the world. There are only things. There are no pleasant experiences and unpleasant experiences in this creation. There are only experiences. Because once you say this is pleasant, that is unpleasant is sitting by the side, you split yourself into the opposites. There are no good and evil people in this world. There is only divinity. So, there are no good and bad events. There are only events. When you say good and bad, you have split yourself. And the mental energy is getting wasted. This is called samatvam yoga uchyate. Now, when you stop splitting yourself like this and waste the mental energies like this, when you stop it, then you transcend the opposites. Yoga. Now the pump is, both pumps are working in tandem and the water is going up. Yoga uchyate. You transcend the opposites. And the barrier between pleasure and pain, good and bad, all the opposites, the barrier between them, it collapses. And you will not know, you will know only the higher good, which has no opposite, the higher being, which has no opposite, the higher love, which has no opposite, that only you will know. The happiness, which has no opposite. You will live in that state, that is Brahma. You have realized your Swarupa. So, it is necessary to give a direction to the manas and buddhi, these two energies. They are the energies, very subtle energies of the individual. So, those energies must be properly channelized so that they don't get frittered away, wasted away. That is the second half of the verse, which we will consider in the next class. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om Tat Sat Shri Krishna Arpanamastu. We will assemble at 11:20.